It's working. Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you all very much for being here today. It's really nice to see you all here for our information plenary on McGill admissions. Some of you may not have received a little pink slip on your way in. It's not a real pink slip. It's just un sondage à propos de la session d'information. Si vous manquez un, Kelly, notre admissions officer, elle va chercher quelques d'autres. Alors, si vous n'avez non pas une feuille rose, n'inquiète pas, ça vient. Je suis la doyenne adjointe intérimaire aux admissions et recrutements. Mon nom, c'est Gillian Nickham. Je remplace la doyenne adjointe. Et je vais vous parler un peu du programme en commençant. Puis, on a les étudiantes ambassadrices, Stacy Smido et Denise Felstina, qui vont vous parler un peu à propos de l'expérience étudiante. Puis après ça, on va parler un peu plus du processus d'admission et les politiques d'admission. So, just to give you a heads up, this information session is webcast, so it will be online probably by tomorrow. But because of that, we have to use the microphone, so if you have questions, you'll be given little yellow cards if you don't have them already. And at the end of the session, we will collect the questions and I'll read them out before I answer them. The session is about an hour and a half, and we are going to try and have lots of time at the end for questions. C'est une session bilingue, if you haven't already figured that out. So we'll be speaking English and French. Feel free to ask questions in either language. So to start, who here is planning to apply for this year's November 1st deadline or March 1st deadline? Okay. Some just interested for future years? Are you interested in future years? Okay. How many CEGEP students? Wow, okay. University? Okay, about half and half, actually. Okay, great. Mature students? If that's okay, that's having been out of a university program for 5 years or more. Okay. So, sort of went through the agenda a little bit. We'll have student ambassadors speak, then go over the admissions policy, the admissions process, and question and answer period at the end. So if you're already looking to apply for this November, you probably have a good idea about the program, but I like talking about it, so I'll just give you a little bit of an overview to start. So it's an integrated common law and civil law program. Students study both legal traditions at the same time from the beginning of their studies. In your classes, that means you'll be learning legal issues from the perspective of these two legal systems at the same time. The courses are taught, well, there's French sections or English sections. There are some bilingual courses. You usually have your choice of whether you're going to take an English section or a French section, but sometimes they're full and you'll be put in another section. So that, in combination with a lot of the texts from both traditions, both the common law and civil law tradition, are not translated. So you do need to be able to read legal texts in French. All students graduate with each with two law degrees, one Bachelor of Common Law and one Bachelor of Civil Law. And our students will probably speak to this a little bit more, but the way of learning law in this comparative way, where from the beginning you are taught to confront the law from the perspective of two legal traditions, it creates a real adaptability and an ability to think through new legal problems really adeptly. Basically makes our students are excellent legal problem solvers right away and comfortable with difficult situations and unknown legal questions. The program is 105 credits. That's slightly more than your typical legal law program. The reason, of course, is because you're studying the two legal systems and getting two law degrees, but there are slightly more credits involved to do that, although less than there would be if you did them separately, I should note. Students do it in three and a half, or four years. It's possible to do the program in 3 years. It requires taking additional courses, sometimes in first year, summer courses. It's a more intense rhythm in terms of course weight if you do it in 3 years. Most students do it in 3.5 years. If you want to do a further concentration, like a major, an honors sometimes, students often decide to do it in 4 years, or maybe without adding additional things like a major, you could still do it in 4 years if that was your choice. Sometimes students go on exchange or do a clerkship or some other kind of experiential learning opportunity in their fourth year, which means that they will finish in 4 years instead of 3.5. So we have two major programs, the Commercial Negotiation and Dispute Resolution Program and the International Human Rights and Development Program. That majors an additional 18 credits. So you can also study a minor in any of the arts or science departments at McGill. There are no minors in management. And this may be interesting to anyone who wants to complement their legal studies with another area of study. It might also be of interest to CEGEP students who, you know, didn't get an opportunity to study at the undergraduate level before coming here and want to complement their studies with another area. You may also do an honors focus, so that's 15 additional credits, and it includes a major research and writing component. All of these, there are really, you know, considerations that are down the line. You don't need to decide about whether you want to pursue any of these until you're in your second year of study. There are joint programs. There's a law and MBA program, a law and master's of social work program. You have to apply to and be admitted to both faculties and have the relevant undergraduate degrees for both faculties. So those are questions that you would address to the Faculty of Management or the Faculty of Social Work, the School of Social Work, to find out what their requirements are to be eligible for their master's program. You can start your program here and then decide to apply to one of those joint programs later on as well. A lot of students start in one faculty or another and then apply to law or to management or social work. This is probably more information than you need right now. It's really more nitty-gritty about the way the credits break down. So I'm not going to go through it in a lot of detail, but in first year, your courses are all required courses. In second year, you start to have some choice as to what courses you are going to take. There are required courses in second year, but there's also room for you to select your courses, and that sort of opens up even more in third and fourth year. There is a writing requirement, so you have to write an essay as part of a course or outside of a course. You can also write a McGill Law Journal article to fulfill that requirement. There's room for you to take credits, elective courses, both outside of McGill, outside of the faculty, and also to take elective law courses. You can study law courses as electives. But if you want to take, you know, a credit at McGill or another university, say there's a course offered at University of Montreal that you want to take, you can use 6 of your non-law credits to do that. We also have a lot of experiential learning opportunities, which I'll talk about in more detail as we go through, but you can take a maximum of 15 credits, from advanced mooting, group assistance, legal methodology, teaching group, human rights internships, clerkships, legal clinic, McGill Law Journal. So these are all sort of outside the classroom opportunities to learn sort of in a more practical environment, more practical setting. So this is more of a breakdown of sort of the things you can be involved in outside of the classroom and in the broader community. There is a wealth of student clubs that are active at the faculty. They sort of have different levels of activity year to year depending on what the students are interested in doing. And there's lots of room for students who come here who may not find a club or a group doing something that they're interested in to start take on a new initiative and start a club or start a project. So there is a lot of room for students to develop their own interests, but there are also a lot of opportunities for students to be involved. You probably walked through one of our most popular social events, the Coffee House. That's every Thursday. So it's a chance for law students to get together on a weekly basis, and it's basically a Seca set. And sometimes it's sponsored by law firms, sometimes it's organized by student clubs, and it's basically a fundraising opportunity for their projects. We have the High School Outreach Program, or LEX, which is a program that's actually run by the admissions office, but it allows law students to go out in groups to high schools in the Montreal area and teach them lesson plans that are designed to sort of give the high school students a sense of what it's like to be a law student and maybe expand their interest in studying law or studying in a post-secondary institution. The Legal Information Clinic is a clinical opportunity you can do for credit or on a volunteer basis. There are Pro Bono Students Canada is another opportunity to be involved in legal clinics. There's really so many opportunities that I won't go into any more of them in any detail right now, but I will talk about clerkships and the human rights internships a little bit more. There is a career development office that is very active and engaged with the student body and very collaborative with the students. So this career development office organizes lots of information sessions and recruitment events for students and employers, be it law firms, non-governmental organizations, government organizations, to both meet in a less formal setting. There's also organized recruitment. So law firms come to McGill from Toronto, New York, Western Canada, and there's organized on-campus interviews so that students don't need to travel to be part of the initial interview process. There's also organized recruitment with Montreal law firms. So the Career Development Office takes care of sort of law firm recruitment and setting students up with law firms if that's what they're interested in, but there's also a lot of public interest work going on. If the Career Development Office does not offer something that a student is interested in, like I said, it's collaborative and they'll work with you to try and help you reach the sort of career goals that you're looking for. They also will help you after you graduate for a certain number of years, so if that is necessary. Here's an interesting statistic. It's directly after graduation, about 90% of our population is in Montreal, Toronto, or New York. So that's where the majority of our students go directly after graduating. 5 years after graduation, up to 30% of those students are dispersed further. So not in those three main centers, but further afield or in other cities. So I mentioned clerkship opportunities. There are organized clerkship opportunities that you can do for credit as part of the program, and they can be in course. They can also be organized something you do after your coursework is finished. So a clerkship as part of your articling experience or something you do after you graduate. Our students are really, they're well known for being liked by Supreme Court justices because of the bilingualism and the integrated program. So a lot of our students end up being Supreme Court clerks after graduation, which is something that we're quite proud of. There is a very rich human rights internship program offered there. This is, I just updated this list, and I was actually quite impressed by the number and diversity of opportunities that are established through the faculty. So these are pre-established. Students apply to take part in these internships. If you do not get one of these internships, or there's an internship at another organization that you would like to do that is not offered and not organized by the faculty, you can apply and ask that that internship be counted for credit. And so you basically submit the information about your internship, and it will be counted for credit if it's approved. So that's sort of another way to create, design your own curriculum in a way, to get to design your own practical experiences and have them count for credit. The faculty is also working to expand the offerings in this kind of opportunity so that they're available for every student who wants to take part in them. Ok, à ce point-là, je pense que je vais passer la parole à les étudiantes ambassadrices. C'est qui va commencer? Ok, c'est Denise Festina. Merci, Denise.
Donc, bonjour, mon nom c'est Denise, je suis dans ma deuxième année ici à la faculté. Et donc, aujourd'hui, j'ai pour but de vous partager mon parcours et essayer de vous donner des informations par rapport au processus d'admission du point de vue d'une élève qui a vécu ça personnellement. Donc, pourquoi est-ce que j'ai choisi McGill? Premièrement, une des choses que je trouvais attrayante, c'était justement cette approche transsystémique dans le programme qui essentiellement intègre deux traditions juridiques, soit la common law et la civil law, dans un même programme. Donc, l'élève fait face à des réalités ou à des notions de manière simultanée des deux perspectives. Ce qui est important de noter, c'est que ici au Québec, oui, c'est un système de droit civil, mais à cause de son histoire, il y a eu beaucoup d'influence de la common law. Et donc, je trouvais ça intéressant que le programme était capable d'intégrer cette réalité. Et pour moi, ça faisait part et ça témoignait du pluralisme et un peu de l'ouverture que l'université partageait. Et je crois que ça permettait, et je crois encore que ça permet à l'élève de se former en fonction de la réalité de l'environnement dans lequel il habite. Et cette réalité, c'est une que je partageais personnellement. C'est une réalité où est-ce qu'il y a beaucoup de diversité. Moi, je suis née en Argentine, j'ai immigré ici à l'âge de 7 ans. Et donc, ça, c'était une des autres choses qui m'a attirée à la faculté, c'était justement la présence d'une très grande diversité. Et en effet, il y a vraiment des gens de tout âge et qui ont des parcours complètement différents. Il y en a qui, comme moi, viennent directement du cégep. Il y en a d'autres qui ont déjà complété un bac ou des maîtrises ou même un doctorat. Il y en a qui ont fait des études en philosophie, il y en a qui ont fait des études dans des sciences appliquées ou qui ont un background en management business. Et c'est vraiment cette diversité qui enrichit la discussion en classe et qui permet de nous ouvrir les yeux à une réalité ou à une perspective qu'on n'aurait pas eu nécessairement de notre part. So now I'll move on more towards my background, so what I did in terms of academics before and my extracurricular activities. So before law school, I was at Dawson in social sciences in the commerce profile. I had always been a very disciplined, hardworking student, and that reflected in my performance. I was an honor student throughout. In terms of what activities I did other than school, I was a volunteer at Project Genesis, which is a community organization close to where I live that provides service users with information and the tools to stand up for their rights, specifically in the areas of housing, welfare, pensions, and other things. I was also, and I am still am, a member of the Conseil Jeunesse de Montréal, which is basically a youth council whose goal is to represent the youth of Montreal. So basically it comes out of the executive of the city, and it writes des avis, des mémoires, in order to make sure that at the municipal level, when policy is being made, they take the consideration of the youth. Other stuff I did a humanitarian trip with Habitat for Humanity. I wrote for Dawson student run newspaper, weekly newspaper. I was a staff contributor. I was also a tutor for Dawson's Academic Center, and I was in Dawson's Model UN team. And there's a bunch of other stuff, not that relevant. Obviously, I'm sharing what I did, but there isn't one thing that's better than the other, and I can't say what exactly contributed most to my selection, but take whatever you find is relevant and leave whatever you can't relate to. In terms of my personal statement, I started working with it on it with a lot of anticipation, so I wanted to make sure that I attended a lot to my language because I wanted to make sure that it conveyed the sort of person that I was, and I wanted to give the person that was reading it a taste of who I was, but not too much so that they would still have some sort of curiosity and to get to know me better. But that's, you could find examples and more information on that, but it has to be really personal and explain why you want to do law, why you have to be, like, why would you have to be selected over someone else? Why are you ready now to do law? Like, I didn't do an undergrad, so I had to justify a little bit why I wanted to go directly into law, and to be able to show who I was and reflect who I was. So that's pretty much it for that. Then in terms of the life at the faculty, the first thing, unlike a lot of people think, it's not competitive in the sense that people do share notes, people are caring of each other, we help each other out, and it's really a process of, it's a work, it's a teamwork experience. Most of us are in groups in which we share readings, we discuss the topics, because it's the best way of learning. So it's not, you know, competitive as it's thought of. Of course, we're all very hardworking students, but no one, you know, lies or anything like that. For me, when I got accepted, in my head it was as if, you know, I made it. This is the point where, you know, I can breathe and it's done. But it's really important to note that once you get in, it's the beginning. It's where it starts. The work hard, the hard work starts then. And it's a matter of consistency and of discipline. And at first, it was a bit difficult for me. I didn't really understand why teachers spoke of certain things. I didn't understand the relevance to certain things. And that's what I really appreciated, was that first year courses are year long. So it gives you a chance to learn and to improve, and you kind of have to deal with the anxiety and put it off and just know that it's a matter of time before you understand the concepts, and eventually you start learning different things and it makes more sense, and you don't have to worry about doing well in the midterms necessarily, because you have the finals to make up for whatever you didn't understand at the beginning. Then, as was mentioned, there's a very vibrant life in terms of, like, outside of just academics. So there's a lot of events, like social events, to socialize with people, and there's a lot of ways to get involved in the clubs and the journals, or being a student ambassador like I'm doing. And I guess to wrap up, to finish, I just want to share with you guys an anecdote when I was going through the selection process. So basically, CTEP students have to have an interview. So there's like a pre-selection, then there's the interview, and not everyone who gets the interview actually gets in. And so when I finished my interview, I didn't think it went well at all. And even, you know, the professor who interviewed me asked me, like, what are you going to do if you don't get in? So for me, I didn't get in after the interview, and they had told me it takes around 2 weeks to get back at you with an answer. So this was early in the morning, and then later that afternoon, I got an email saying, you got in, you got accepted. So I was really, really happy. I couldn't believe it. I was, you know, my parents were so proud, and then being the person that I am, I couldn't, you know, I thought it was a mistake. So I called the admissions, and I'm like, you know, I had the interview this morning. They told me it would take 2 weeks, but you just sent me an email. Did I really get in? And they're like, yes, like you've actually been offered a spot, so you just have to pay your deposit or whatever to confirm. And yeah, I just thought that was funny. That's it. And if you have any questions, please feel free. I'll stay behind that.
We've got Stacy, who's going to speak to you for a couple of minutes.
Bonjour tout le monde. Je m'appelle Stacy Smedo. Je suis une étudiante en troisième année ici au faculté. Avant mes études universitaires, j'ai étudié en sciences politiques et histoire à l'Université d'Ottawa. Et puis j'ai commencé ici juste après. J'ai commencé en français juste parce qu'évidemment, je ne suis pas francophone. Et c'est une question qu'on entend souvent, c'est est-ce qu'il faut vraiment être comme complètement bilingue et pas comme complètement, évidemment, je ne suis pas, mais il faut vraiment être capable de comprendre dans un cours ou pour lire des textes juridiques dans l'autre langue, mais c'est aussi une occasion pour vraiment essayer d'améliorer votre compétence dans une deuxième langue et pour, oui, juste améliorer. C'est, dans le fond, on commence tout avec aucune idée qu'est-ce qui se passe avec tout ce droit et droit civil et droit common law et c'est quoi. Et donc, vraiment, c'est une occasion pour apprendre de base tout le monde ensemble. So I just wanted to demonstrate to everyone that you don't have to be perfect in your other language. That was a big fear that I had. When I was applying to McGill, and this was kind of the school that I really wanted to get into when I was applying. So, yeah, that was kind of my thing that I was really concerned about when I was applying, so I wanted to share that. In the application process, I applied straight out of my undergraduate studies, which worked out well for me, although I really do appreciate that lots of people in my class, my colleagues here, didn't do that and have so many diverse experiences, whether they've worked or done other studies, and that to me is really the thing that really makes McGill special, is that there's so many fascinating people. My favorite thing about being at McGill is Coffee House, which you probably all had to fight through to get here, but just where we all hang out and chat and talk about what we learned that day and or things outside of that, to me that's been the most valuable part of being at McGill Law. Which is kind of why I knew that this was where I wanted to study law. I knew that it was a special faculty for that reason, and it hasn't disappointed in that regard at all. As Denise said, the other really special thing is the Trans-Systemic Program, which I also can't say enough fabulous things about. It's been just really fantastic to study both systems at the same time. Honestly, sometimes it's a little bit confusing when you have two things thrown at you and you're going, why is it different? And often it's not actually that different, although in some cases it really is. Certain things, if you're doing contracts in Ontario and Quebec, you want to know the difference. So that has been truly fantastic, and the opportunities that has led to for me and my friends that are here, in terms of we can go anywhere in the world, through with a few jumps along the way, but the doors have really opened to us across Canada to go lots of different places. So that was me applying to McGill Law. When I was applying, I didn't have a particular interest in any area. I just kind of knew that I wasn't done with school, and I really liked the law-related things that I had seen, and I knew that it would give me a chance to study lots of different areas, but from a legal perspective, that has been fantastic here as well. I've been able to take classes in Aboriginal law and taking tax right now, which is actually fantastic. Everyone should take tax. It's awesome. And just classes in so many different areas. And I've been exposed to so many things that I wouldn't have ever even thought about before coming here. So, yeah, now that I'm here, like I said, I'm in my third year, so I've had a chance to do a lot of exciting things at the faculty. I did a human rights internship that was spoken of a little bit. I went to Colorado for the summer after my first year, which was really exciting and beautiful. It was fantastic. And I was working in kind of a research position there. At the faculty now, I'm involved in one of our academic journals. There's an extracurricular hockey team just for the law faculty that I'm a part of. There's a choir, which is really fun. So there's all those kind of fun things you can do. There's also the more legal related interest clubs that do a lot of really exciting events at the faculty, and that's kind of one of my constant problems is there's so many fun events that I can go to that whatever club is going on, and you just can't make it to all of them. But there's lots of really fantastic activities that people invite really fantastic speakers into the faculty. We're actually hosting Judge Cote from the Supreme Court in a couple weeks. So we're all really excited about that, and we can really get some fantastic events happening in the faculty. So I'll conclude just saying that I hope you all enjoy today, and that you, if you have any questions about anything to do with the program or studying law or anything at all, I'll be around after. So thanks.
Merci Stacy et Denise, c'était vraiment intéressant. Même moi, j'ai appris des choses. C'est toujours le cas quand les étudiants parlent. Leur perspective, c'est vraiment c'est quelque chose qui est valable, surtout dans ces sessions d'information. Alors, maintenant, on va passer un peu, parler un peu des informations générales sur que peut-être vous aurez à voir en préparant la demande d'admission. La première chose, c'est de se questionner, lire notre site web. C'est là pour vous, law-admissions. C'est aussi c'est en français puis en anglais. Faire vos recherches sur notre faculté, comme vous faites aujourd'hui, et sur les autres facultés que peut-être vous, dont vous êtes intéressé un peu, pour voir qu'est-ce qui est différent à propos de eux, qu'est-ce qui est différent à propos de nous, qu'est-ce qui vous intéresse à propos de notre programme spécifiquement, et à propos des autres programmes aussi. Ça va vraiment vous aider à savoir et à écrire ou expliquer qu'est-ce qui vous intéresse dans les différents programmes en préparant vos demandes. Si vous avez des questions, nous vous encourageons de collaborer avec le bureau des admissions. S'il vous plaît, lire notre site web avant de nous contacter, parce que vraiment beaucoup, c'est vraiment complet notre site web, les informations sur la suite des admissions. Et après avoir lu le site, si vous avez encore des questions, notre bureau, c'est vraiment tellement capable et content de vous aider. Et le courriel est là pour le bureau des admissions, et aussi le numéro de téléphone, c'est en ligne aussi. Alors, le politique des admissions... Le politique, l'objectif du processus de l'admission, c'est de retenir les candidats les plus aptes à étudier le droit dans l'environnement bilingue, comparatif et transsystémique unique à McGill. L'excellence et la diversité sont essentielles à la faculté. En effet, nous estimons que l'excellence de notre faculté prend sa source dans sa diversité. Alors, le comité des admissions cherche les indicateurs tels que curiosité intellectuelle, l'engagement communautaire, l'éveil culturel, économique, politique, social et autres, la capacité de leadership, l'aptitude de travailler avec les autres, l'ouverture face à la diversité, la maturité, le sens éthique, le jugement et la faculté d'adaptation aux conditions tant positives que négatives. Alors, c'est vraiment beaucoup, mais encore pas assez de caractéristiques qu'on cherche, parce que vraiment, la comité d'admission s'est ouverte à vous voir dans vos dossiers. On cherche les candidats qui sont capables au niveau académique parce que le programme c'est assez rigoureux, mais aussi on cherche quelque chose qui est un peu différent dans les dossiers avec dans nos candidats. On cherche des voies et des perspectives diverses parce que ça crée un environnement d'apprendre dans les cours qui est plus stimulant, qui est plus intéressant. Alors, c'est à vous de nous dire de qu'est-ce qui vous fait spécial. Ceci dit, le processus d'évaluation des demandes, c'est holistique. Je ne sais pas si c'est un mot en français, mais on les regarde holistique. On regarde le tout dans les dossiers. C'est-à-dire que les your transcripts will be looked at in their entirety. Personal statement, letters of reference, CV. We'll get into those a little bit more as we go through, but it's not. There's no cutoffs and weights given to grades or anything. Really, the committee looks at every element of the file. And like I think Stacy mentioned, the policy of passive bilingualism. So that is, it's important to highlight again that what we're looking for in the file in terms of bilingualism is an ability to read and understand French and English, the ability to write and speak, although these things all kind of come together when you're learning a new language, are not as important because what you really need to be able to do is understand legal texts and be able to follow conversation when you're in courses. If you feel shy about speaking French, it's an opportunity to learn while you're here, to get over that. But even if you take a French section course, you can still do your exams and your essays for that course in English and vice versa. And in your file, the committee will be looking for bilingualism on transcripts, certificates from courses you might have taken, such as the Explore program. You can write your personal statement or your CV in both languages if you like, but we don't recommend doing that if you feel it will compromise the quality of your personal statement at all. Le plus important, c'est d'être clair, convaincant, bien écrit. Alors, si vous croyez que ce n'est pas possible en même temps que ce soit bilingue, c'est mieux de laisser le comité d'aide des admissions trouver le bilinguisme dans les autres parties de votre demande. Okay, so this is these are numbers from 2014, just to give a sense of our application and offers to the program. So last year we had 1,221 applications, 246 offers made, 186 students in the first year class. The average CGPA of the entering class last year was 85. That's pretty stable year to year. It's usually 84, 85. That's the average. There is still a pretty wide range. It can go from 75 to 95 for the cumulative GPA. And that's for all your years of undergraduate. All your in the undergraduate category, all your years. These are actually the university category numbers, not the CEGEP category numbers. For those who wrote it, the average entering LSAT was 163, again, with a fairly wide range from the low 150s up to high 170s. L'année dernière, on a eu 15% de la classe qui provient du cégep et 17% qui ont eu une maîtrise ou un doctorat. 41% de la classe a fait le LSAT, ça exclut le cégepien parce que la plupart des cégepiens n'écrivent pas le LSAT. Et l'âge moyen était 24 ans. So these are the cégep numbers. On a eu 346 demandes, 80 entrevues, 34 offres d'admission. Le quota moyen des entrants était 34,17. Je crois que les numéros en bas sont peut-être pour les entrevues. Celui qui a été entrevué, entre 37,8 et 30,2. On a eu chaque année, il y a à peu près entre 25 et 35 étudiants cégepiens qui entrent dans le programme. Et comme Denise a dit, tous les candidats cégepiens sont interviewés en une entrevue avant d'être envoyés une offre d'admission. Mission requirements. So, we require that you have either your French baccalaureate or your DEC and 1 year of university studies, or at least 60 credits of university studies for the university category. In the university category, it's really quite rare that someone who has only 60 credits and not their complete degree will be considered competitive. We just have so many candidates in that category that someone who's applying with only 60 credits of their undergraduate degree is very unlikely to be competitive in that category. So although it is an eligibility, it's probably advisable to complete your undergraduate before applying. We kind of went through the bilingualism and how it is assessed. If the committee doesn't see enough evidence of French in your file, but they like your file, you will be given a phone call with a test to see what your level of French comprehension is or English comprehension. So that's sort of the last step in the assessment of bilingualism. Bilingualism isn't really competitive the way the other elements are. If you have the requirements in both official languages to succeed in the program, that's sort of the end of the analysis. It's not that candidates who are perfectly bilingual will necessarily be more competitive than someone who is just has the what they need to be able to succeed in the program. In terms of transcripts, we're looking for a transcript of all of your university studies, CEGEP. Well, you must send in your permanent code if you're a CEGEP student so we can access your CEGEP records. The committee does, like I said, does look through the transcripts in their entirety. So they will look at your coursework, your progression through your courses. Are you taking, you know, a lot of elective courses or a lot of 1 and 200 level courses and not very many 3 and 400 level courses? Sometimes a GPA can look really strong, but when you get down into the coursework, it doesn't look as strong anymore, and vice versa. It can look, you know, numerically less strong, but that student took a lot of really challenging courses, and that can help make the evaluation of the transcript more competitive. So the LSAT is not required, but like 41% of the entering class last year did write it. We often get asked when and why should a candidate write the LSAT. That's really a determination that you need to make. But if you feel that your file is academically below average, below our average entering class, a good LSAT score can really help improve your file. So if you find that you're testing well in the LSAT, it could be a good idea to write it. When I say testing well, I mean in preparing to write it if your sample exams are going well. The same thing, a poor LSAT could bring your file down. So you sort of have to assess where you think you fall in the competitiveness, especially on the academic side of things, and whether you think an LSAT is going to help or hinder that. We will look at your file after the February LSAT deadline, but it's a good idea to have it written by December because your file won't be circulated until your LSAT results are in. So the later you write it, the longer your file will sit in our office before being circulated to committee. And if you do plan to write the LSAT or you have written it in the past, you must disclose to the admissions office that you have written it and in your application, either in your application at the time of application if you know. If anything changes, you call the office and let them know or email them. You have to disclose if you're planning to write it or if you have written it. For your letters of reference, looking for preferably two academic letters of reference. So from professors who know you well, you feel can speak to your capacities as a student. It's a nice idea to check with professors who are you're asking to write your letter of reference and ask them what they think they might say if they write you a letter of reference. We're really looking for some detail about what kind of student you are, not just, you know, is a lovely person and shows up on time for class and is always respectful. We're looking for a good reference letter will speak to your performance in your classes as well. If you don't know two professors well enough to give you two solid reference letters, we do take reference letters from employers, organizations you've volunteered for. And if you're a mature candidate and don't really have access to professors that you worked with at this time, then the committee is a lot more open about what is a good reference, but it should be someone who's worked with you in a supervisory role. In the CV, the committee is really looking for leadership, community engagement, which can take all kinds of different forms from being involved in extracurricular activities at school, student clubs, sports, music, working either in a more professional context or as sort of a part-time job while you're studying. They're looking to see that you are motivated, that you're able to balance something else besides just your studies. So while if you've got really great grades but you didn't really do anything else but work on your studies the whole time you were in your undergrad, that may be less competitive than somebody who's got good grades and a lot of involvement and a lot of rich experiences. It helps the committee if you include the number of hours that you worked during the academic year. It just sort of gives them a sense of the amount of time that you were committed to outside of your classes. And we require a 2-page maximum on the CV. If you submit a CV that's longer than 2 pages, the committee will not read the remaining pages, so they only read the first 2 pages. It's a very peaceful ringtone. For your personal statement, the student ambassadors gave great information on that. It's really your moment to give the committee information that's not found in your more fact-based documents like this, your CV and your transcript. It's your time to shine and to stand out. It should be well-written, convincing, concise. It should answer the questions why you want to study law, why do you want to study law in our unique trans-systemic program, what do you feel like you will contribute to the faculty while you're here, what are your motivations after law, possibly, what is your background that led you to law. You should really, I think for people who are struggling to write their personal statement, I usually say you should really just spend, half an hour at least sitting and thinking about why you want to do this and understand it for yourself. Because if you have not had a chance to really articulate for yourself why you want to study law, it's going to be difficult for you to explain it in a nice way that is convincing to someone else. So it's really about reflecting and taking the time to really understand it for you. Edit and have it reviewed by someone else is always a nice idea to make sure you pick up any errors. That's sort of the worst thing to see in a nice personal statement is that it isn't reviewed properly. And again, it's we ask that it be maximum two pages. Pour la procédure des entrevues, ils sont encore pour la plupart avec les candidats cégepiens. Dans les autres catégories des candidats, on fait les entrevues si on décide que c'est nécessaire, mais c'est assez rare dans les autres catégories. Les entrevues sont environ 25 minutes. Il y a deux professeurs de la faculté qui sont là. un membre du comité puis un autre membre de la faculté. Les entrevues sont bilingues, sont dans les deux langues. Et on peut se présenter en personne à la faculté ou par vidéoconférence si vous n'êtes pas en ville ou près de la faculté. Les entrevues ont lieu en février, avril et mai, mais pour les cégepiens, c'est plutôt en avril et en mai parce que la date limite pour cette catégorie, c'est le 1er mars. You do your application online through our website. Supporting documents must be uploaded on Minerva, not reference letters, though. There is information and a PDF on our website that is information for referees. You can send that to your referee, and it gives them information about how to approach writing your letter of reference, the letter of reference, and how to send it in. When you want to check the status of your application on Minerva, we really ask that you check to make sure your application is complete. Check Minerva regularly and allow 48 hours for Minerva to update after you have to be updated after you've submitted documents and your application, especially around the deadlines. We have a heavy volume of applications coming in, so it takes us time to process all of those and update Minerva. So here's the deadlines for the September 2016 entering class. For university mature and advanced standing candidates, November 1st is the deadline to submit your online application, and then you have another week to submit all your supporting documents. CEGEP candidates, it's the 1st of March to submit the application and the 7th to submit the documents, and then there's just the fees for 2015-2016 for Quebec, non-Quebec, and international students. It's always a good idea to apply early. There's no rolling basis for admission, but it helps avoid bumps in the road when the deadline is looming and the admissions office is very busy and will take longer to get back to you. So if you want to sort of have the process be as smooth as possible, applying early really helps. Then you can have everything, make sure everything's all well and done before the deadline is approaching. Ici, on a un calendrier du cycle d'admission pour entrer en septembre. Alors, c'est les dates importantes, comme les dates limites. Le dernier test de L7 recommandé, c'est en décembre. On commence à faire les offres d'admission en décembre et janvier. Le 1er mars, c'est la date limite pour une demande d'admission en la catégorie Cégep. Le 1er avril, c'est la date d'accepter notre offre pour la première série d'offres qui sont envoyées. Et en avril-mai, on a les deuxièmes séries d'offres. Et les candidats cégepiens sont convoqués pour une entrevue. On commence la liste d'attente, puis on voit où on commence l'inscription en personne à la faculté de droit. En fait, cette année, c'était fait en septembre. Et on est rendu au Q&A. Just to reiterate, the pink sheets that you were given on your way in, those are a survey about this information session. They really help us improve year to year what we're doing, so it'd be really helpful if you can take a minute to fill those out and give them to Kelly or myself on your way out. If you don't have one, if you could raise your hand, Kelly can bring you one. And you were probably also given yellow sheets of paper. Those are what we ask you to write your questions on. So for those who came in late, this will be webcast this session, so we ask that you write your questions down. Kelly will collect your questions, and then I'll read them before answering them, and Stacy and Denise might want to help answer some of them as well. One other thing, while we're just collecting things and handing things out, Since this session will be webcast, you can refer back to it later if you feel like there's something you missed, but there's also a re-applicant workshop that is also webcast, so that gives even more detail about some of the pitfalls of applying to the program for those who have applied once and are reapplying, but it can be a resource that can be helpful your first time through as well. So. Okay, so I'm going to just get started reading some of these while Kelly collects them, and maybe you think of some and write some down. So this is a good question about the LSAT. If I wrote the October 2015 LSAT but plan on taking it again in December, will Miguel wait to make a decision upon receiving the December score? The answer is yes. We don't. If you're planning to write it, you will have let us know that you're planning to write it, and we won't circulate your file to committee until the score results for December have come in. And when there are multiple LSAT scores, it's an average of your LSAT scores that is looked at. That said, if one score is really low and one is really high, and there's, or, you know, one is low and one is high or higher, the committee will see both of your scores and in the light of the rest of your file, even if the average score isn't as high as we would like to see, the higher score might play a bigger role. Okay, so can high school transcripts that demonstrate 4 years of French classes count for demonstrated bilingualism? So you don't submit your high school transcripts. And we don't. I've never actually seen one as a proof of bilingualism. You could say that you took those years of French in your high school classes. There's obviously a difference between core French and immersion French in your high school program. But if you did study a lot of French and then in high school, and there's no evidence of French since then, and you are a university candidate, that means it's been 4 years since you were in a classroom doing any kind of French work. The committee's probably going to wonder about your level of French at this time, even if you did have a significant amount of French in high school. So it's worth mentioning that on our application, it does ask for you to say where you learned English and where you learned French, and it's there that you would say, I was in a French immersion program all of high school, and the committee will decide if they need to know more, if there's no other sign of French in there. Okay, is there more emphasis on the cumulative GPA or on trends? Is first year of undergrad weighted as heavily as third and fourth years? No, it sort of depends. If the committee sees that in the first 2 years of study, or the first year of study, you struggled and your grades are not as high, but then in third and fourth year there's an upswing, they will see that in your transcript and take it into consideration. So although the cumulative GPA is used for our reporting purposes, in terms of saying the average of the entering class was 85%, the committee will look at each class that you took throughout the course and will see trends that are there. Maybe you switched programs partway through and were doing not very well in your first program, but then switched in your third year and started doing really well. That's another trend that can be identified in your transcript. Can you submit 3 reference letters? The answer to that is you can, but the committee will only read 2, and they'll read the 2 that you specify in your application as your referees. So when you're filling out your application, you have to list your referees. If you want to change one of them, that's possible up until the deadline, right? If you want to change one, it's possible up until the deadline. But if you submit more than 2, the ones that are not indicated in your application will be put in a folder. They won't be put in your application folder. The committee won't see them. So how early can we apply and upload slash send all supporting documents? The application process opens September 1st, so you can start applying as of September 1st, and you can upload your supporting documents as soon as your account in Minerva is active, which is happens shortly after you submit your application. Is it preferred to send reference letters from an academic professor or not? So, yeah, yes. As I mentioned in the presentation, it is preferred to send to have academic references. If you feel that you have a professor who knows you well enough to speak to about your abilities, your academic abilities. So, if you've only got one such professor, you can submit your second letter can be from someone else who has worked with you in some kind of supervisory capacity. These are great questions, by the way. Can you do a major concentration, such as international human rights, and a minor? I don't know. I think you probably can. Yes. It would probably take up all of your elective credits to do that, but because you have to complete the minor, you have to do, I think, 18 credits in that in your minor, and then there's a certain amount of credits required for the major. So you'd be probably doing all of your courses in your major and your minor, all of your electives. What are the kinds of questions in the interview? Well, that depends on who is interviewing you. So it's faculty, and there is sort of a guideline for them to follow, but it really varies. What they're really looking for is your ability to engage in a critical conversation. So be ready to be nimble and to have a conversation that is thought-provoking and to be able to respond to thought-provoking questions. They usually start with your record somewhere. So they're not going to pull something out of thin air and ask you to be intelligent about it. It'll be something that's usually based in what you submitted with your application. By the way, Denise, if you want to jump in to answer anything, feel free. What kind of questions, again, and in the interview? Okay, to show personal achievements, how far in years can we go back for it to actually still have an impact? So I'm assuming that's a question related to the CV. That really depends on you, and if it's something that is, it was a while ago, but it was very important, so a while ago, 10 years, say it was something that happened over 10 years ago, an employment or an opportunity or something you were involved in, if you feel like it's really relevant to your application and why you want to study law and it makes you look good that you were involved in that, I don't see the harm in putting it in. So there's no real cutoff. That said, if there are large gaps, you know, or you were involved in some interesting things 7 years ago and you haven't really done much since, that could be, less competitive. The committee also does look at the length of involvement. So if you have been involved in, you were a volunteer at an organization for 2 months here and then another one for a month here, that the length of involvement will kind of show the amount of commitment you've had to each of those opportunities. So it's nice when the CV has a longer periods of involvement. And I know that's not always possible where many of your students, but it's just worth noting that they're looking for a length of involvement and dedication to things in some ways. So is the faculty more interested in students from a technical program or from a pre-university program? So that must be in reference to CEGEP studies. We're not really looking for any specific background. There's no prerequisite or preferred course of study coming into the Faculty of Law. We like we said, we like a diversity of students in the class, and that comes from all kinds of different elements of your life, including your academic background. Specifically for CEGEP students, the committee will want to see if you are in a technical program that you have had courses that have required analytic reasoning, and that can come in science classes, arts classes. That's not to say that technical programs are not preferred at all, but they will want to see that there is that a bit of diversity and a capacity to handle analytic problem solving in your transcript. Will you look at fall 2015 transcripts for university applicants? So when you initially apply, you won't have your fall 2015 transcripts, but we ask that you send them in once you do have them. So if your file is circulated without them, it could be seen before those are in, but once we get them, they'll be part of your file. So if you're sent an offer before we get your transcript, then we don't need to see those, obviously, to make our decision. But do send them when you've got them. Does it look bad to the committee if you switched your major or minor multiple times? I wouldn't say it looks bad. I think if you feel like there's something on your transcript or on your CV that needs explanation, it's a good idea to include that in your personal statement or in a letter of extenuating circumstances. If there's maybe the worry that it makes you look like you're flaky or not dedicated to, something you start. But maybe you started a couple different things and you really just they weren't what you needed to be studying, or they weren't interesting to you and you needed to switch it up. I think providing that explanation is perfectly valid to the committee. And it's always better if you feel like there's things that could be misinterpreted or confusing or could lead to their own conclusions in your file. It's always better to provide your own explanation instead of let the committee draw their own conclusions. How does McGill convert a 4.3 GPA to a 4.0 GPA? Does the law faculty favor McGill students? So no, we don't favor McGill students. We have students from universities all over Quebec, Canada, internationally, and we like it that way. We convert your grades, each grade in each course, if it comes from a different scale, different GPA scale, we convert it to the McGill GPA scale. So we will see your cumulative grade point average on a 4.0 scale in your file. When it's sent to committee, that's what will be there. Will an internship be considered for this year's admission, even if it is to begin during winter 2016 semester? So an internship, I'm assuming that is going to be... that would be something you'd be wanting to put on your CV, maybe, that hasn't happened yet. If you know it's going to happen, you can mention it in your personal statement, especially if it's something that you're particularly proud of or happy about. You could also put it on your CV, although I think if you're going to put it on your CV, it's good to also mention it in your personal statement so the committee doesn't see you kind of putting things on your CV that haven't happened yet without you providing some kind of explanation for it. So... that's a way to deal with that. J'ai changé de programme en cours de... Attends, il faut que je lise ça avant. OK. J'ai changé de programme en cours de parcours au cégep. J'ai donc deux cotaires. Prenez-vous celle du programme dans lequel j'ai gradué ou bien le cotaire global? Global. Je regarde Kelly pour la réponse. Elle est le spécialiste de plusieurs choses dans le service des admissions. Alors, on prend le cotaire global. Est-ce que les institutions nous donnent un cotaire global ou c'est... OK. Alors c'est Mearst qui nous donne un cotaire global qui ajoute les deux ou prend la moyenne des deux cotaires que vous avez. Okay, so in the advanced category, okay, these questions apply to, I'd say, any application. For French, can I upload a French test certificate in the system? We ask for all certificates of all programs of study of French that you have taken. So if you've taken, if you have a certificate from Alliance Française or the Explore program, you would want to include that as part of your academic record. So yes, upload it. And the personal statement, how personal should it be? That's actually an interesting question because sometimes they are very personal and sometimes they're not personal enough. It should always relate to what you're doing right now, why you want to study law, or what is motivating you to want to study law here. It doesn't need to exclusively be about that. And those motivations can come from a personal place. They can come from professional aspirations. They can come from all kinds of different areas and places of your life. So it can come from your academic, you know, as Stacey was saying, she had just sort of enjoyed all the law aspects of her undergraduate studies and wanted to pursue that further. So it can come from one or two or three different places, and you can talk about all of them. It shouldn't be too personal, but it also should probably be more personal than a cover letter, because you are trying to convey something interesting about you and why we would want to have you in our faculty as opposed to someone else. So, I don't know if you guys have any other thoughts about that. Okay. Can you speak a bit about the law faculty exchange program? Okay, so exchanges with other universities. We have many exchanges set up already with institutions around the world and in Canada. And you, if you wanted to go on an exchange, you apply. You would go to the other institution that you're on exchange with, you pay your McGill tuition, and you go to the other school, the other university that you're on exchange with. So it's all handled through McGill. You don't really deal directly with the other university. That said, if you want to study in another university for a semester and it's not one that McGill has a pre-established relationship with, you can set it up so that you can study in another institution, but you do have to apply and pay tuition at that university. So it's handled externally from McGill. That's the difference. There, if you want to have a better sense of the universities that we're partnered with for exchanges, you can check it out on the law website. There is a list of them there, so get a better sense. There's quite a number of different universities that are listed there. Are CEGEP transcripts required for mature applicants, or are university transcripts sufficient? Yes, we do want to see your CEGEP transcripts or have your permanent code so that we can have them have access to your transcripts. Okay, so as a university student, do you recommend I have two academic reference letters, even if I deem that another faculty worker with whom I work can speak better of me? So one academic and one non-academic. I'd say if you think that you've got somebody you've worked with can be a better voice for your reference letter, then I'd say use your discretion to do one academic and one non-academic. So for the joint MBA/law degree, does a co-op experience count as a one-year work term? That is a question that you'd have to ask the Faculty of Management, because that requirement for a one-year work experience is their requirement for the MBA program. So I would address that there. I'm not sure I understand this question. How does the university evaluate dropped courses, discontinued courses? If whoever asked that question wants to clarify. Yes. Okay, so how does the committee look at dropped courses? Like anything, if you feel like it's something that you want to be able to, you want to provide an explanation for why that happened, that's always a good idea. There's no consistent way that a dropped course is evaluated by the committee. If there's a lot of them on your transcript, they will start to wonder why there are so many dropped courses, and so it's always a good idea to give them the answer instead of letting the committee draw their own conclusions. Unless it's, if it's, so there is also the option of submitting a letter of extenuating circumstances. It's usually if something has happened in the course of your studies that interrupted your studies or led to lower marks in a certain period of time, or maybe you feel there's a lack of involvement on your CV, but it's because of family situations or a medical situation or something else that impacted your ability to perform or be involved. You can provide that information in a letter of extenuating circumstances so that you don't use up your word count in your personal statement. So if it's just to explain one course and you don't really have a good explanation, good. You don't really have an explanation that you feel warrants creating a letter of extenuating circumstances, you could mention it in your personal statement if you want to explain it. But if there's more of a lengthy explanation for it, then you might want to create a letter of extenuating circumstances. Sorry? Yes. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that we would have. And we do ask for supporting documentation, so that can be doctor's notes, things like that, if you have it. If you don't have it, it's fine. The committee's generally they err on the side of the candidate in evaluating the extenuating circumstances, so they do like to see supporting documents, but it's not a requirement. So, as a university student, do you take into account CEGEP and exchange grades? So, yes, and how do they compare the exchange grades to the Canadian university system? We're used to seeing international transcripts, so no, I'm not sure the exchange grades are calculated. They're not part of the cumulative GPA, but obviously the transcript is in your file. We ask to see your transcripts from the university where you did your exchange. So even if it's showing for credit on your home university's transcript, we ask that you send in your transcript from the university where you did your exchange as well. In terms of being a university student and having your CEGEP grades there as well, they're part of your file. Your undergraduate grades will play a stronger role in the file, but the committee does also look at your CEGEP grades. What does an 85% cumulative GPA correspond to on the 4.0 scale, McGill? So it's a pretty much borderline between a 3.7 and a 3.8. High 3.7, low 3.8. Can studying the paralegal technology program at CEGEP help for the admission process? As I explained before, we're not really looking for any specific background of study for admission. We don't have a preference in that area. If you are studying a technical program, like I said, we like to see some evidence of analytic skill, which can come from all kinds of different places. So it's not necessarily an advantage to study in a paralegal program, but it's not disadvantageous either. Okay, est-il mieux d'avoir une lettre personnelle qui a une approche créative ou plus formelle? La créativité, c'est toujours quelque chose qui est bon dans la lettre de présentation personnelle. Ça nous donne, c'est plus intéressant à lire, ça nous donne peut-être une meilleure idée de vous comme personne, mais c'est toujours important de ne pas sacrifier la substance. Si vous à l'idée d'écrire un poème, mais la substance, c'est pas assez forte quand vous faites ça. C'est peut-être mieux de faire plus comme dans une lettre plus formelle. Alors, c'est à vous de décider. Moi, je trouve que les lettres de personnes, j'ai vu pas beaucoup de lettres qui sont dans un format alternatif, mais c'est quand il y a quelque chose dans la lettre qui est attrayant ou intéressant, ça c'est original, comme une approche originelle. C'est quelque chose qui est remarquant, comme on se rappelle de cette lettre un peu plus. Mais comme je dis, c'est important d'être certaine que la substance est forte. If I'm graduating from Dawson this semester and applied to McGill Philosophy for the winter 2016 semester, would it be recommended to finish the undergraduate degree, or can I apply to the law program for September 16? So you, as a graduating Cégep student, you're still considered a Cégep student 1 year after graduating, after completing your Cégep. So you can start a program at McGill in philosophy and still apply as a Cégep candidate. This one I think we sort of covered. It's about being in the hospital during my first year and it affected my grades. That's something that would be appropriate for a letter of extenuating circumstances, as explained before. This question, is it a possibility to study one or two semesters given the mixed BCL LLB approach? I'm not sure I understand that question. If you want to clarify, go for it. If not, I'll move to the next one. Okay. Is a reference letter written by a prof better than one written by a maître de stage? Again, that will depend on what you feel each one is going to say about you. The committee does like to have at least one, preferably two, reference letters from academics, if possible. Is a February LSAT exam score accepted? Yes, sorry if that was unclear before. It is accepted. It's just that their file will not be circulated to the committee until your February score is in. So they've already started making offers in December or January. So if your file is held up till February, it makes the process longer, and there are less spaces in the class available by the time we start looking at the February applications. Is successful completion of Cégep French courses considered evidence of passive bilingualism for Cégep applicants? If they do well in those courses, it can be enough. Usually Cégep applicants are not the ones that we are concerned about in terms of having bilingualism. It does happen where you can graduate from Cégep without having adequate French, but it's more rare. Are there any age restrictions for studying law or working in the field of law? I'd say no to that. I think we have in our faculty students of all of a wide range of ages. We have a lot of Cégep students who are 19, and we have a lot of students who are in their 30s, 40s, and older. So not lots in the older, but it does happen. I think studying law is possible at any age. Will the failure of this year's application have a bad impact on the following year's application? No. We have lots of reapplicants, and we have a lot of successful reapplicants, people who apply a second time and do get in. If you want more information about being a reapplicant, we do have a webcast of the reapplicant information session that we had earlier this semester, so that's available online. Can I talk more about the kind of candidates McGill is looking for? So I sort of covered some of that when speaking about the program and the admissions policy. We're looking for students with a strong academic background, who are community engaged in their community, strong analytic thinkers, with a good motivation for studying law in our program. Instead of going more deeply into it at this point, I think if you want to review some of the content of tonight, you can watch the webcast and also check our website, because there will be sort of the whole admissions policy, the admissions policy and what they're looking for is also laid out there for you as well. I think I answered that. How can I prepare myself academically if I want to enter the McGill Faculty of Law if I'm in Secondary 5? I think sort of address this in the sense that there's no specific courses that we're looking for you to take as a preparation. The best advice for preparing yourself academically is to work really hard and get good grades, especially if SAGEP is a very competitive group of candidates. So get good grades to show the committee that you've got the skills to succeed in the program. There's a question about Minerva and applying now. I think it's a bit specific. I would suggest maybe emailing the admissions office. It's about uploading supporting documents after paying your application fee. So I suggest emailing or calling the admissions office to get your answer to that. Je pense qu'on est presque rendu à la fin. Je vais essayer de répondre à quelques une œuvre de plus, puis après, si vous avez des questions qui n'ont pas été répondues, je serai ici, je peux vous parler un peu plus à la fin. I think we answered that one. That as well. Okay, so more information on extenuating circumstances letter. What elements are you looking for? Basically, it's just an explanation of the circumstances that took place and how they affected your grades or your CV, or those are the two main areas that it would apply to. So, and then the supporting documents to go with that if there are any. Does a McGill law degree allow one to practice in the U.S., U.K., or other common law jurisdictions like Hong Kong? So our graduates are eligible for to write the New York bar and the Massachusetts bar directly upon graduation. If you want to study or practice in other U.S. states, you have to write, I believe, the New York bar first makes you eligible for other bars. So let's say California, if you wanted to practice in California, you would write the New York bar first, which makes you eligible for the California bar. But really, other than New York and Massachusetts, the answer to that question will be given to you by the local bar of that state. And the same thing with other common law jurisdictions. You should call directly the areas where you're interested in practicing and ask them what, if any, additional courses you would need to take to be eligible to practice in those jurisdictions. Where can I write the LSAT? You should look on the LSAC website for that information. They have all of the information there. Again, a question about Minerva. I think it's probably best to follow up with the admissions office. Answer that. Okay, so I still have some questions here which we didn't really get to. So like I said, I'll be around for a little bit if you have questions that weren't answered at all. Again, thank you all for coming. And if you could leave through one door, maybe this one over here, so that Oh, sorry, if you leave through that door, you can put your survey on that table. Otherwise, hand it to Kelly on your way out on this side. And again, thank you all for coming.